And now, it's your turn with Dave Mullarkey. 724-283-2525. It's Butler County's only live call-in talk show. It's your turn on 680 AM WISR and worldwide on the internet at WISR680.com. It's your turn, 724-283-2525. And now, it's your turn with Dave Mullarkey.
Well, good afternoon once again, everyone. Welcome. Nice to have you with us on the Monday, the chilly and windy Monday edition of It's Your Turn. And boy, it's still pretty windy out there. Not as bad as yesterday, but it's no piece of cake either. The temperature has just jumped up another notch, 29 degrees. We really don't look for it to get any warmer today. And that wind is still blowing. Yesterday, we had wind gusts of 50 to 60 miles an hour. And it just didn't stop, did it? And once that wind kicked up, mid to late morning yesterday, it just kept blowing. We still have, as you heard on the local news, thousands of people across Butler County without power and without heat. So we feel for them, that's for sure. Well, we'll make our own heat. We'll make our own sunshine today here on the program. It's a book talk day, and we have a wonderful classic to talk about today. Let's first welcome our guest. Amy Kellner is here, the adult and young adult services librarian at Zelianopol Public Library. Amy, good to see you again.
Well, thanks for having me back.
I was looking at our book talk record here, and I can't believe it was last May that you were last here. It's almost a year ago, for goodness sakes.
Yeah, we all get our turn, so I'm glad I had a nice February day to come up from Zelianopol.
Well, we talked about a good book last time. It was A Gentleman from Moscow, I think. Was that the title?
Yes, that was an excellent book.
Yeah, excellent. And you have chosen a true classic for discussion this time around. What is it?
The Count of Monte Cristo by Alexandre Dumas.
Yes, French writer, set in France and Italy, mostly, back in the early 1800s.
Yes, the time of Napoleon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it helps to know at least a little bit about French history and Napoleon at that time to understand the whole circumstances of this novel.
Yes, there's a lot of political intrigue, so it does help to know a little bit about the two different sides there.
Mm-hmm. I looked up a picture of Alexandre Dumas just to see what he looked like. He was a strange-looking character.
Yes, he was. I don't know if most of those pictures are from older in life, but he did have a fairly exciting life and I guess knew how to enjoy himself, so the pictures kind of represent that.
This novel was first published somewhere around 1840, I think. In that 1840, 1844, something like that. It was first published as a serial in a magazine, which was rather common back in those days.
Yes, and you can tell by the different chapters. You know, they're not long chapters.
Mm-hmm.
So
there's a lot of them.
Yeah, you can see how it could have been a serial.
117 chapters, folks. This is a long book. There's no question about it. But as Amy said, the chapters are short. Still, 117 chapters. Holy moly. Charles Dickens had some of his novels first published as serials in magazines.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So it happened back in those days. Still happens today occasionally, but certainly not as often as back then. Of course, back then, a lot of people didn't have access to books or libraries and relied on these magazine serials to, for their reading. The main character about which this whole lengthy novel circles is Edmond Dantès. I will tell you straight away, Amy, my French is horrible. I never took French. I know only a smattering of words in French. And the names, almost all of them are French. They threw me. It was, it was hard to get the correct pronunciation of those names in my mind. So I may be way off base on some of these. I don't know. Edmond Dantès, do you think that's close enough?
Close enough to me, yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's his real name. He went by several pseudonyms throughout the book. One, of course, is the Count of Monte Cristo, but he took on several other fake names as well.
Yes, at one time he was a priest. He was an Englishman.
In fact, a couple of times he was a priest. Once when the priest was dead, and another time he took the name of another priest.
Yes.
Well, when I first started reading it, rereading it, I read this when I was in high school, which I imagine most folks who've read it did, because it's considered really a classic piece of literature. When I first started reading it, I thought of Zorro. Now, everybody today knows Zorro, it was a TV series, several movies. Antonio Banderas just played Zorro a few years back. But Zorro had an assumed identity that nobody knew. You know, his real name was Don Diego, but he was Zorro, you know, the masked man. Well, Edmond Dantes beat Zorro by a long shot because he had several secret identities. It starts out, Edmund is a young man, he's only 19 years old, but he's been promoted to have his own ship. He's a merchant seaman. Can you tell us the circumstances of that? The captain on the ship on which he was sailing died, I guess, right?
Yes, the captain has passed away, and the ship owner knows that he can trust him. So Edmund gets off the ship at port, and he's ready to go, you know, share his success with his father, who's a bit impoverished. He's ready to marry his fiancée, who's been waiting for him. And then all of a sudden, it all gets turned upside down.
To say the least. This happens in Marseille, the port of Marseille in France, which is in southern France. It's on the Mediterranean, what we know as the Riviera these days, Marseille. Big city even back then, of course, and a big seaport. So the problem is that there are three guys who, for various reasons, become very jealous of Edmond, and they decide to frame him. One of these bad guys is Danglars, and again, I apologize if my French is horrendous, it probably is. He was the treasurer on the ship that Edmond was on, and he resents the fact that Edmond got the big promotion and he didn't, right?
Yes.
And then there is Fernand Mondego, who happens to be in love with Edmond's fiancée. It was Mercedes, I think is her name,
yes,
right?
Yes, Mercedes.
Yeah. Trying to keep the various fiancés and lovers straight. So that's the second guy. And then the third guy is a guy named Calderos, who didn't have anything to do with the ship. He's just a neighbor of Edmond's. And he's just envious that Edmond has achieved such success at a very young age. So the three of them plot to frame him. What do they do?
Well, he kind of helps them out because his deceased captain has asked him to deliver a letter to a certain person.
Mm-hmm. That was kind of the captain's dying wish.
Yes. Know? And so they find out about the letter, and they write a letter of their own accusing him of treason. And so he's called before the court, and it just so happens that the judge he's called in front of is related to the man who the letter is addressed to, and he does not want the information in the letter to be made public, so he sentenced Edmond to prison at the Chateau d'If.
For life.
Yes.
Yeah. This is where you have to have a little bit of background on French history, because there were sympathizers of Napoleon Bonaparte, who had been at this point exiled to the island, was it Elba? Is that where he was exiled to? And this letter that the captain, his dying wish at sea, the letter that he gave to Edmond was to take it to a group of Bonaparte sympathizers in Paris. It was a letter from Bonaparte. And when these other guys heard about that, that's what they used to frame him. Well, bad guys will eventually get their comeuppance. And so will the prosecutor. As you mentioned, he was really set. He was aware of that Edmond was being framed, and he was ready to set him free. The prosecutor's name was, and again, I apologize, Villafort. That's how I pronounced it in my own mind anyway. When he finds out the name of the man that who's supposed to get Napoleon's letter, it's his father. It's his father. So he's worried that that's going to, you know, if that gets made public, that'll hurt his political future. So he decides to, you know, put Edmond in jail for life. I'd never heard of this Chateau Dift, this prison.
Yes, it's a real place.
I was just going to ask you, is it a real place?
We have a woman in our book group who always comes up with a interesting connection to the places or people we discuss.
Mm-hmm.
And she has actually been to the prison and took a tour of the Chateau Dift. So it is a real place. And people were sentenced there for life.
Yeah, I got from the book that the most dangerous political prisoners in France were sent there. The only French prison that I was familiar with was the Bastille. They still celebrate Bastille Day, you know, in France. I had never heard of this Chateau Dift, but that was apparently where they sent the worst of the political prisoners.
Right. It was a island, so there was really no way off for them. But our hero does find a way off in a very unusual way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, an island off the coast of Marseille.
Yes.
In the Mediterranean. There's a couple of islands. There's Corsica and Sardinia off the coast there. One of them, if I recall my geography, one of them is the property of France and one's the property of Italy, because, you know, they're kind of halfway between the two countries there in the Mediterranean. But anyway, that's where this prison is located. And our protagonist, our hero, our central character, Edmond, was there for a long time. He's there for like 14 years.
Yes. At first he contemplates suicide after having been there for quite a while, and then eventually he gets not a cellmate but a person in the cell next to him who he develops a friendship with.
Mm-hmm. And this is a an Italian priest by the name of Abbe Faria.
Yes.
Abbe Faria, I'm not sure how you pronounce that one. My Italian's not too good either. I guess he was a political prisoner as well, jailed there. This priest had never really said specifically why, but he was an intellectual, very smart guy.
Yes, a very learned man, and he starts to share his knowledge with Edmond.
And this is another like 7 or 8 years after he, you know, meets this fellow prisoner, and he really educates Edmond, because, you know, he was a 19-year-old merchant seaman. Didn't know a lot about history and geography and philosophy and all that stuff. And he learned it from this Italian priest.
Yes.
Who also, by the way, was planning an escape, right? He had been digging a tunnel or something.
Yes, but he also had the problem that he had a severe illness. Though he knew how to cure people of many illnesses, he could not cure himself of the one he had.
Mm-hmm.
So in the end, he does not escape with Edmond.
He had a stroke and passed away. But fortunately, for the sake of our novel, The Count of Monte Cristo, he revealed to Edmond before he died the location of a huge fortune on the island of Monte Cristo.
Yes, which eventually will enable Edmond to finance his schemes for revenge.
Now, it's interesting how Edmond finally escapes the Chateau Ift. Once his newfound friend, the Italian priest, dies, Edmond hides in his burial shroud.
Yes, and he assumes that he's going to be buried and have to dig himself out.
Mm-hmm.
But since they are on an island, they don't bury. They toss them overboard, basically. They toss them into the sea.
Burial
so he
sea,
has
yeah.
to break out of the shroud and swim to safety.
Shades of Houdini. Didn't they used to lock Houdini in a chest and handcuffs and all that stuff and drop him in a fish tank or something and he would escape before he drowned? That's what I thought of when I heard about this. But Edmond does escape and swims to safety and ends up on the island of Monte Cristo. And he finds the treasure, right, that the Italian priest had told him about.
Yes, a cave full of treasure.
Mm-hmm. And suddenly he is extremely wealthy, very wealthy, as a matter of fact. And he decides that now that he has the means, he's going to extract revenge on these three guys who framed him and had him locked up in a prison for 14 years.
Yes, he finds out that his father has died. Basically, he starved to death because he had no funds.
Mm-hmm.
His fiance has married another man.
Oh, I forgot about that. Yes, his beloved Mercedes. By the way, I forgot to mention, he was arrested and sent to prison for life. It was on the day of his wedding, wasn't
yes.
it? The day he was supposed to get married.
Mm-hmm.
Bummer. And he finds out when he gets out that Mercedes has married somebody else.
Yes, she's married Fernando. So.
Mm-hmm. That's right. That's the guy that one of the guys that framed him. Oh, how are you going to get back at him? You have to knock him off, even though he's married your former sweetheart. Well, the plot thickens. We'll take a break. We'll talk more about this really wonderful classic, a long book, but a real knock 'em sock 'em adventure story, don't you think?
Oh yes, exactly.
Yeah, good stuff. You're listening to Book Talk on the Monday edition of It's Your Turn here on WISR. We'll take a break. Be back with more right after these words.
Rich is just a really, really, really good guy. The term good egg isn't enough to describe him. He's also certified organic and free range. Rich puts the cap back on everything. The toothpaste, the olive oil, the shampoo, everything. He lets his 10-year-old nephew beat him at virtual tennis, even though he can straight up slay his 10-year-old nephew in virtual tennis. When the toilet paper is running low, Rich replaces the roll on the actual holder, not just on the back of the toilet. Rich is texting and driving. Rich? No. What are you doing, Rich? I was just telling everyone how great you are. Texting and driving makes good people look bad. Visit StopTextStopWrecks.org, a public service announcement brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
The Young Funeral Home of Butler invites you to stop by their Jefferson Street location, downtown Butler, to talk about pre-arrangements. Not the easiest thing to do, but necessary. And the Young family will walk you through the process, making it very comfortable and really easy to take care of. You'll experience peace of mind knowing that your wishes and plans will be carried out to the last detail. Call the Young Funeral Home in Butler today to make an appointment with a member of the Young family. Generations of the Young family have been caring for generations of Butler families for well over 40 years. The Young Funeral Home, West Jefferson Street in Butler. Welcome back. It's a Book Talk Monday here on It's Your Turn on WISR. I'm Dave Malarkey, and Amy Kellner is with us, the Young Adult and Adult Services Librarian at Zelianople Public Library. And the book that they've chosen for discussion this month is The Count of Monte Cristo by Alexandre Dumas, a classic that goes way back to the middle of the 19th century, first published around 1844. When you put this in its place, this is like, almost 15 years before the American Civil War.
Yes.
It's a long time ago, very long time ago. We left our hero, Edmond Dantès, having escaped from the Chateau d'If, having made it to the island of Monte Cristo, having recovered the huge treasure that the dead Italian priest had told him about, and he starts using the money. He saves his old boss, the ship owner, was Morrell, was that
Mr.
his name?
Morrell. Yes.
He gives him some money so he's is not ruined. And Calderos, his neighbor, who has had regret about this whole thing, of the three guys who framed him, he is the guy who was most sorrowful. And Edmond gave him a valuable diamond.
Diamond, yes.
As I recall. That didn't help him, as it turns out, in the long run, but he tried. And then the next place that Edmond turns up is in Rome. So we go to Italy for the next section of the book. He takes on, for the first time now, he takes on the identity of the Count of Monte Cristo. And here he meets Albert de Morcerf, who turns out to be the son of his former fiancée, who married Ferdinand.
Yes.
His son. And he, you know, ingratiates himself with him. I think he saves him from bandits or something. Is that right? Am I remembering that right?
Yes, he saves him from bandits and comes to like the young man and becomes friends with, you know, some other Parisian gentleman.
Mm-hmm. Nobody recognizes him except Mercedes. It's his former fiance. She recognizes who he really is, this so-called Count of Monte Cristo. But she doesn't tell anybody, right?
Right.
Yeah. So I'm trying to remember what happens next, because he's at least temporarily dealt with Calderos. And how does he end up dealing with Ferdinand? Do you remember?
It had to do with a incident that happened in Turkey where he met a pasha, and the pasha was assassinated, I believe, and then the wife and the daughter were sold into slavery.
Oh,
and
yes.
The wife dies, but the Count of Monte Cristo rescues the daughter.
Mm-hmm. And thank goodness for that, because we find out at the end of the book that he ends up marrying her, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So, and is it Ferdinand, or is it Danglars, the guy that he leads to financial ruin by manipulating the stock market?
Danglars.
It was Danglars, yes. Who was the treasurer of the ship, and was very envious of Edmond getting the big promotion, and he did not. So he wipes him out financially eventually, right?
Yes, and Danglars' wife helps with the next step because she happens to be having an affair with one of the other gentlemen he has on his list.
The prosecutor.
Yes.
Villefort, yeah. The tangled web that Alexander Dumas. This must have been pretty racy back in the day. We're talking about 1840s here.
Yeah, and you can understand how if they were reading it in parts, you know, there's a lot of cliffhangers. So
yeah, it's like
exciting.
The old serials that you used to have in the Saturday matinee at the movies, you know, where they would have a cliffhanger so that you'd come back the next Saturday to see the next part.
Yes.
Yeah, well, that's the way they did what Dumas did with this book. So what about the writing style? I found it, you know, for a swashbuckler, a fairly easy read. You know, there's some stuff that's that old. If you go back before the American Civil War, it's a tough read because some authors wrote in very stilted language back then.
Right. When we did it in our book group, some people said they did have trouble with the names because some of the people were referred to by their title, and then you'll see them again referred to by their proper name. Mm-hmm. But other than that, it is exciting. You go from action to action and... like I said, the short chapters help, so.
There's even more to the story of Villefort, who was the deputy district attorney, I guess, who had sentenced Edmond to life in prison. Villefort not only had an affair with Danglars' wife, but she had also become pregnant. And when the baby was delivered, Villefort attempted to smother the child, infanticide, and tell her that the infant had been stillborn.
Yes, he buried him in the backyard, basically, but someone else found him.
Well, and this is where you have to kind of shake your head. I mean, you know, it's been complicated enough. But as Villefort is burying the child, he gets stabbed by the smuggler Bertuccio, who unearthed the child and resuscitated him. The nick of time, you know. Phone call from the governor. Well, that, of course, leads to more trouble later on. Because Bertuccio's sister-in-law brought up the child, gave him the name Benedetto, and he took up a life of crime as he grew older and into adolescence, ends up killing his adoptive mother, and so on and so forth. The Count learns about all of this from Bertuccio, the guy who had stabbed Villefort, because he becomes a kind of a confidant of the Count of Monte Cristo. So the plot goes on. Again, folks, there's 117 chapters in this book. Now we come to the Count using another alias, Lord Wilmore. Do you remember that, Amy, or have I got you totally confused by this point?
Lord Wilmore, I believe, goes to the shipping company.
Well, he's the guy, as Lord Wilmore, he induces Benedetta, who is the child who was dug up and resuscitated. He induces Benedetto to take the identity of Viscount Andrea.
Yes, the Count Cavalcante? Is that the...
Yes. Andrea Cavalcante. By this time, you need a chart to follow all of this stuff. But at any rate, Andrea Cavalcante ingratiates himself to Danglars, who betroths his daughter Eugenie to Andrea, the Viscount Andrea, not knowing that they are half-siblings. So the plot thickens at this point. And eventually, somebody goes insane after all. Is it Danglars that goes insane when he just can't understand all of this anymore?
I think it's Villefort who goes insane.
Oh, the prosecutor.
Yeah.
I took notes for a while, but then my notes became so messy that I couldn't follow it. Yeah. So back to the story that you started to tell us about a little bit earlier, when there was Ali Pasha, who had been betrayed to the Turks by Fernand, and his wife and his daughter, Haydee, is how I pronounced it, I'm not sure, they were sold into slavery, and lo and behold, who purchased them but Edmond, the Count of Monte Cristo. And he eventually, at the end of the book, ends up marrying Haydee.
Yes.
Yeah. It occurred to me that I'm not sure this book could have been written today. And there's a lot of pretty nasty stuff in here.
Yeah, you know, poison, that, murder.
Yeah, there's that one point where he convinces he teaches the one woman about the use of poison, and she starts killing off all members of Villefort's family. These are innocent. This is like the death of the innocents. They didn't have anything to do with it. I don't think you could ever write that today, could you?
Probably not, no.
I don't think so. There have been a million motion picture adaptations of this book. I don't recall ever seeing any. Do you?
I have never seen any, no. I usually prefer to keep the picture of the book that I have in my head than see a movie version that messes with what I think it should be.
One was fairly recent. I mean, it's like within the past 15 years or so. It didn't do that well at the box office, but can you imagine trying to write the screenplay for this? 117 chapters?
it would even be hard to make it a miniseries.
Oh, absolutely. It would take a couple of weeks. What was the reaction of the book club? You facilitate the book clubs, right, at the Liverpool Public Library. What did the members of the book club think about this?
They were split about 50-50. A lot of them had read it at one time before. Some of them got bogged down when he's in prison. That section seemed to stretch a while for some of them. But we do have one woman in our group who likes to recommend a classic every year. So thanks to her, we've read Robinson Crusoe and The Grapes of Wrath, and she chose this one. And I'm glad I read it. I hadn't read it before, so.
Is this the same woman that is familiar with French history?
No, she wasn't really familiar with French history. A lot of them said they wish they were a little bit more familiar with French history so they understood what was going on in the book a bit better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, at the time this novel is set, you know, we had the people who were sympathetic to Napoleon Bonaparte, and we had people who were sympathetic to the crown, because we still had a king of France at that point. Bonaparte's remains were eventually brought back to Paris, his ashes, and they were placed in a church, Les Invalides, and they're still there, to the best of my knowledge. That's kind of a spot that a lot of tourists go to when they visit Paris. I've been in Paris a couple of times, but I didn't go there.
Oh, okay. I've never been there.
I don't really need to see the ashes of Napoleon Bonaparte. But there have been several governments in France, you know, if you go back over the past 150 years. You know, when it was the king for a while, then there was the First Republic, the Second Republic, Third Republic. I'm not all that familiar with it, but it's pretty complex history back in those days.
Yeah, and you can understand how in this novel you have a father who's on one side and a son who's on the other when you talk about Villefort and his father, Noirtier. So.
Our author, Alexandre Dumas, also wrote another very famous novel that's set at about the same time.
Yeah, The Three Musketeers.
Three Musketeers. There have also been countless movies made about that. Now, I have seen some of those. I don't recall seeing The Count of Monte Cristo, but Three Musketeers, pretty good stuff.
Mm-hmm. And The Man in the Iron Mask.
He wrote that, too?
Yes.
I didn't know that.
Over 277 novels he wrote in his lifetime.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've seen, I've not read that book, but I have seen a film version of that as well. Well, he must have made some money then, if he...
He made some money and he spent some money. According to the biographies, he died penniless.
Wow.
Yeah.
I also noticed that he's referred to sometimes as Alexandre Dumas Père, which is the French word for father. I don't know. Did he have a son by the same name?
A son by the same name who was also a writer of some success. His father's name was Thomas Alexandre Dumas, and his father was the son of a French nobleman and a Caribbean slave woman.
Hmm.
Yes, and so his father led quite an exciting life, and some of the adventures he puts in his books are supposed to be based on his father's exploits.
Wow. I didn't know that. I didn't know that he had a son who was a writer as well. But yes. Obviously not nearly as famous as Alexandre Dumas Père. I wonder if he had any idea, you know, when he published this back in 1844, that it would still be read today by high school students all over the English-speaking world.
Yeah, it comes up on all the, you know, the list of books you should read at some point for people who followed the Great American Read. It was mentioned in that. So.
I also saw online that it's, among the many other languages into which it's been translated, it's extremely popular still in Japan, which kind of surprises me. Well, you know, they like the samurai novels there. Uh-huh. Maybe that's why they go for this one. Talk a little bit about the themes of this novel. Obviously, revenge would be one of them.
Revenge, justice. Once he attains his fortune and he has the means to carry out his revenge, he kind of feels like he's the instrument of providence, that he's doing what should be done. But by the end of the novel, he's more realized that it's not up to him, and it's not the power of one man to do all those things.
Yeah. Does he ever think, we're talking about Edmond Dantès now, who's the Count of Monte Cristo, does he ever think that he might have gone too far in some of his revenge plots?
I think maybe at the end he does sort of realize that. The last word in the book is hope, wait and hope. So I think that's a good way to end it, yeah.
I think he might especially have regretted, introducing one member of Villefort's family to the use of poison and then her starting to knock off all the people in the family.
Yeah, like you said, innocent people got hurt in the process. Yeah.
Okay, well, they framed him, but, I mean, he lived. Might want to punish him a little bit. You don't think after that they'd kill them all. Well, that's the way it worked out. Did you read this in high school? Do you remember?
No, I never read it in high school. This was the first time I read it. So
mm-hmm. I read it in high school. I can't remember whether it was assigned reading in American literature or whether I just read it, because it was a page-turner. And it still is, for goodness sakes. Yeah. By the way, do you see the copy that I got? This, it is a really, really old book, folks, with yellowed pages and everything. Still put together and pretty good. Came from Evan City Library. I checked just for the heck of it to see the copyright date. There is none in here. But it does, the preface to this edition was written in 1936. So this is an old book. But you were telling me that this comes from the Evan City Library. They have quite a nice selection in that library.
Yeah, they have a nice collection of classic books, both kids' books and adults. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Have you read any of the other Alexandre Dumas novels, Three Musketeers?
No, I never have, but I think I might now. I did like this one. So.
Mm-hmm. Man in the Iron Mask was pretty good, too. Same type of, if you're familiar with movies, Earl Flynn, swashbuckler,
yes.
that sort of thing, Tyrone Power, made a lot of those movies. Hey, we need to take a break. We're chatting with Amy Kellner, who's here from Zelenople Public Library on a Book Talk Day. And before I forget, let me tell you what's coming up next month on Book Talk. Prospect Community Library has selected the book An American Marriage. It's a fiction by Tyone Jones. Not familiar with the book? Not familiar with her, are you?
No, we have it on our list to read with our book group later this year, but I have not read it yet.
Might not even be a woman, I'm not sure. Tyone Jones. Well, anyway, the date for that will be March 25th, well, I've guessed from the Prospect Library here. Take a break. Back with more on It's Your Turn here on WISR. After this.
For most kids, the glass is half full. They have access to fresh milk, a vital source of calcium, potassium, and protein. But for 1 in 6 kids in Pennsylvania, the glass is half empty. They face hunger and malnutrition. By supporting the Fill a Glass with Hope program, you can help bring fresh milk to Pennsylvania food banks so every kid can have what every kid deserves, a full life. Please donate at feedingpa.org/milk. Brought to you by the American Dairy Association Northeast, Pennsylvania Dairymen's Association, and Feeding PA.
Your daughter looks up to you. She loves that you love soccer. You're her MVP. Together, you can take on underage drinking. From ages 8 through 11, kids are most open to parents' messages about alcohol. So learn the facts and defend her against the harms of alcohol. Take your best shot at underage drinking, one-on-one. Talk with your kids about alcohol. Learn more at knowwhennohow.org. A message from the Pennsylvania Liquor Control Board.
Amy Kellner is here from Zelenople Public Library today, on the It's Your Turn program. It's a book talk day. We're talking about The Count of Monte Cristo, a classic book of literature. In this case, French, obviously. The book was originally written in French, but translated into English, and it remains very popular today. There was a quote you wanted to share with our listeners, Amy.
Yes, in the preface to the book I read, it said, Dumas' work ignored historical accuracy, psychology, and analysis, but its thrilling adventure and exuberant inventiveness continues to delight readers. And that's part of what I liked about it, that you didn't get into what motivated the bad guy. You weren't led to feel sympathy for him. You know, the three who started all Edmund's troubles, they were very clearly the bad guys. Mm-hmm. And for the most part, the bad guys get what they deserve, and the good guys end up okay, for the most part, though there are some exceptions in the story.
Yeah, there's not too much gray areas here, you know.
No.
The bad guys are bad, and the good guys are good.
Yes.
And the good women are good, and the bad women are bad. It was interesting, I did a little bit of background work, because I was actually looking up some stuff on Alexander Dumas. I didn't know that much about him, other than he was French, obviously. But the idea for this story actually came from an earlier story that Alexander Dumas was familiar with. It was by another French author, and it told the story of a shoemaker who was engaged to marry a rich woman when three jealous friends falsely accused him of being a spy for England. And the guy was put under house arrest, where he served as a servant to a rich Italian cleric. And when that guy died, he left his fortune to the other guy. So, I mean, I almost want to say it's like plagiarism, you know, at least for the plot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that seed was planted.
Mm-hmm. But that's not unusual in writing, especially back in those days, you know, where the idea for something comes. I assume this is before the age of, you know, lawsuits for plagiarism and that sort of. Besides, how could you, you know, it's a different novel. He just uses similar plot device.
Right. I'm sure most of his readers would not have minded the way he did that.
We're talking about The Count of Monte Cristo. How are the selections for your book club? Well, first of all, you have actually more than one book group, don't you?
Yeah, we have two adult book groups, and we also have a after-school book group for 4th through 6th graders.
Do you facilitate all of those?
No. I do the adult book groups, and then we have a volunteer, a teacher who does the children's group.
Are the groups fairly large? Or?
Yeah, we generally have about 12 to 15 people for each of our adult groups. And the way we make our suggestions is once a year we get together and we talk about what we're going to read for the next year, and everybody picks a month and suggests a title. And then when it's their turn, they bring the snack, and they also do a little bit of background work on the author, maybe come up with some discussion questions.
Mm-hmm. So you do this pretty much every month?
Yes, every month.
And where do the book groups meet? At the
library?
For
the most part, we meet at the library. Sometimes we do meet in someone's home if we have a special event or whatever. Yeah.
And what about the young adults? These are kids still of school age we're talking about here?
Yeah, they meet at the library after school.
Mm-hmm. And they also meet on a regular basis?
Yes, they meet every other week. And right now they're reading Peter Nimble and His Fantastic Eyes by Jonathan Oxier.
There are some people who years ago predicted the demise of book groups, you know. They're still pretty popular.
Oh, yeah.
I think all of our libraries here in Butler County have at least a couple of sometimes more book reading groups.
Yeah, we could probably have another book group if we had the room in our schedule to put it, because we have more people who are interested than we can accommodate. So.
Do you have multiple copies of books that you're going to discuss, or do you just rely on the members of the group to find a copy to read?
No, we borrow them from the other libraries, because you can usually have a book that we don't have on our shelf, we can usually have fairly quickly from one of the other libraries, and anybody can do that. You know, if you walk into your local library and a book's not there, we can acquire it for you from somewhere else. The Butler Public Library also has a nice program where you can check out an entire kit with 12 copies of a book. And that's not just for the libraries. Again, that's for anybody who has a book group or who's interested in doing one. You can mm-hmm. check them out, and then you have enough copies to distribute to everybody who's interested, and then turn it back in a month when you're done.
Yeah, that's really a good plan. And they just package those all up in a sack.
Yes.
And if you want to check them out for a month, there you go. That's at the Butler Area Public Library, but I think people from other libraries can also use those, right, can't they?
Yes, yes. Mm-hmm.
What's most popular among reading groups these days? Is it modern fiction or history, or does it vary?
With our group, it varies, but I'd say contemporary fiction, anything that's going to be made into a movie, of course, is always popular with people. So.
Yes, I've seen in bookstores many times when there's a novel that has been adapted into a film, then they'll republish another edition mm-hmm. of the novel, usually a paperback with a still picture from the movie on the front, hoping to capitalize, you know, on folks who have seen the movie and then want to read the book.
Yes.
Yeah. The Count of Monte Cristo. I'm so happy that you selected this. I enjoyed going over it again. It kind of took me back to my high school years when I first read it.
Well, I'm glad you liked it. You always get something different out of a book when you read it a second time.
Oh, so. Absolutely. Yeah. So what's new at the Zeeley Nopal Public Library? Aren't you planning some renovations down there?
We do have some plans in the works. First step is new carpeting for our children's library, which will be soon. And we did get some grant to help with that. And then we hope eventually to redo the circulation area on the main floor also.
Where is the Zeeley Nopal Public Library?
227 South High Street in Zeeley Nopal.
So if somebody wasn't that familiar with Zeeley Nopal, how do you get there from the highway?
Our library is on High Street, which is parallel to Main Street. So we are back-to-back with the Walgreens.
Okay. I know right where you are now.
Yeah.
Yeah. Have enough space?
For the most part, we do. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Any events coming up in the not-too-distant? This is Read America Week, isn't it? Reading in America or something like that?
Read
Across America?
Read Across America, I believe.
Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you. I couldn't remember.
Concludes with Dr. Seuss Day for Dr. Seuss's birthday. So we'll be having a special children's event on Saturday to commemorate that. And then later on in March, we have the second speaker in our Zeeley Nopal Library Presents Speaker Series, John L. High. He's the former chief steward of Air Force One. He'll be there to speak on March 14th.
Oh, wow. Is that open to the public?
It is open to the public. It's a fundraiser for the library, so it's $8 to come hear him speak for adults, and $5 for kids.
What time is it?
7 o'clock.
And that's March 14th?
March 14th. This
will
be Thursday.
Thursday.
Yeah.
The reason I knew that is because Valentine's Day was on a Thursday, and March 14th is the same as February 14th. Unless it's a leap year, which this is not. So, well, that'd be nice. Wow. How did you ever get him?
He's a Western Pennsylvania resident, and he does library talks, so we've been hoping for a while to get him, so we're happy to have him this year.
Has he written about his time service on Air Force One?
He does have a book. I believe it's An Honor and Privilege to Serve is the title of the book, and I think there'll be copies of the book there that night also.
That's fascinating. Yeah. Do you know anything about him? How many presidents he served? Did you know?
Four presidents and also a number of other dignitaries. So.
Wow. Be nice to get on Air Force One, wouldn't it? Look around.
Yeah.
I mean, you know what it looks like from the outside. It's a gargantuan 747, but all kind of stuff in there, you know? presidential compartments. There's a place for news media if they're coming along. Secure rooms, you know, traveling war room and all that sort of thing. Wow. Well, that's great. What's that guy's name again?
John L. High, H-A-I-G-H is his last name.
Well, that would be a terrific speaker. Do you try to get other speakers there occasionally too?
Yeah, we started last year with the speaker series, and last year we had four, and this year we'll have six. In May, we have Jo Goodman, who is a historical romance writer. She lived for one time in Zillionople, so she'll be coming back to speak, but she's written a number of successful novels. And then later in the year, we have a couple of local historians coming to speak on Zillionople's first settlers, on Gus Buell, who was a resident of Zillionople and a soldier. And then we're also having an architect, Michael Korb from Canon Design, who is designing the new Seneca Valley Elementary School. He'll be there to speak.
Outstanding. Yeah, terrific. We need to take one final break here. We'll do that, and we'll be back to wrap up our conversation with Amy Kellner here on It's Your Turn on WISR. Back after these words.
Planning ahead is simple. Planning at the last minute is hard and emotionally frustrating. And planning a funeral at the last minute during an anguishing time of your life is an unnecessary personal burden. Thompson Miller Funeral Home in Butler suggests that you pre-plan the funeral. Make all the choices now while you're still emotionally stable. The funeral service, the choice of caskets, which minister, priest, or rabbi, cremation, visitations, flowers, church service or not, all of these decisions must be made. Make them now before the emotions set in. Pre-plan with Thompson Miller. Think about it, then call us to meet with you and to discuss it privately. Call 724-287-3706, 287-3706. Pre-arrangement. It really makes sense. Thompson Miller Funeral Home at the corner of East North and McCain Streets in downtown Butler. Thompson Miller. Time-honored excellence.
You know, there's something I was going to look up, and I never did. Quite frankly, I was trying to finish up my reading yesterday without any power as the electricity went out. And you'd think during the daytime you could, you know, get close to a window and read, but it was so dark and gloomy yesterday I had to use a flashlight. So I'm trying to finish this book under a flashlight, and I didn't have online access or anything. Is there really an island of Monte Cristo, do you know, or is that a figment of Dumas' imagination?
I think it's probably a figment of his imagination, but I don't know for sure.
Mm-hmm. It would have to be a smaller island.
Yes.
You know, I mean, I'm thinking kind of like Alcatraz or something like that. There is really an Alcatraz island in San Francisco Harbor, but I don't know whether or not there's an island of Monte Cristo. We know that there's an island where the Chateau d'If is located.
Yes. So,
well, who knows? If it is something that he made up, he picked a great name because it just gives you that feeling of, you know, swashbuckler tale, The Count of Monte Cristo. Yeah. Did you enjoy the book? I did.
Yes, I did. Very much, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I think people of any age, certainly young adults, would enjoy it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. They might be a little put off by the length of it, perhaps, because it's a long book. But even adults who maybe haven't touched it since high school might enjoy a reread, huh?
Yes, I think so.
So when will you pick out the next round of books for your book club? Do they do that at the end of the school year?
No, we just did it recently. We did it at the beginning of the calendar year, so we're set now until 2020.
Do your book clubs meet in the afternoon or in the evening? I'm thinking
in the evening.
Okay,
yeah.
Because people at work wouldn't be able to be there perhaps
right.
In the afternoon, huh? Do you have men and women?
No, our groups are all women. We have had some men come and go from time to time, but Not right now.
In many cases, that might be because of work schedules and so on and so forth. There are still a lot of guys who read, of course.
Yeah, and a lot of times the women in our group who are reading a book discuss it at home with the men in their life, too.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
They share comments with us.
What about young readers? You know, we're still, well, we have a whole generation now that grew up on J.K. Rowling's stuff. And, you know, their kids are now reading about Harry Potter. But that was a real sea change, don't you think, in getting young people to start reading again?
Yes, I think so. Uh-huh.
I mean, not just do it because they have to, but, you know, we had kids dressing up in Harry Potter costumes and going to bookstores at 12 midnight, you know, on the day that the book was going to be released, for goodness sakes.
Yeah, and they still check them out all the time. It's not like it was a fad that was finished. They're still very popular.
Still popular, really?
Yeah.
And there were, what, 6 or 7 of them all together, I think.
Seven?
Yeah. She has moved on to other things now, and I don't think it's young adult literature that she's doing anymore, is it?
No, it's more mystery suspense for adults written under a different name.
I didn't know that, no. People reading the adult stuff?
A little bit. Not as much as her children's stuff, but yeah.
I know a lot of adults who read the Harry Potter books and enjoyed them immensely.
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm.
Even though they were supposedly for kids. Not just for kids anymore. Well, Amy, thanks for choosing this book. I think it's still a good read, even though as I hand you my copy back, I'll hand it delicately because it's so old. Get that back to the Evan City Library. Did want to mention a little bit about the winds of yesterday. We checked in our newsroom about the highest wind gusts in the area. Here in the Butler area, we were between 50 and 60 miles an hour for wind gusts, which borders on low hurricane strength. I don't know. Were you looking at any of the trees blowing yesterday? Even the big trees going, waving back and forth like corn stalks in the wind. It was brutal. The highest winds recorded in our region, at least, were in West Virginia. They had 73-mile-an-hour gust down there. We had wind gusts of 63 miles an hour recorded in Mercer County, as I said here in Butler County, between 50 and 60 miles an hour. It was pretty brutal, and there are still thousands of people without power and heat here, so we feel for them. And it's still pretty windy out there today. It's not as bad as yesterday, but wind gusts up to 45 miles an hour today, and wind still pretty steady out of the west at around 20 miles an hour. We'll have that today. A little bit overnight, the wind should have died down considerably by tomorrow. And in addition to the winds, it's cold out there. Right now we're in the upper 20s. We don't expect to get much warmer today. Overnight tonight, we drop into the mid-teens. So that's going to be chilly. And tomorrow, a high only around 30. Normal high for us, you know, we're in late February now. The normal high is in the low 40s. We won't see that until the middle of the week, Wednesday and Thursday. But that'll be nice when that arrives. Amy Kellner visiting with us today. Thanks for coming up. Good to see you again. Nice to talk to you.
Yes, it's always good to come. So I'll look forward to the next time.
And our next book talk will be on March the 25th. Prospect Community Library has chosen a novel, a fictional work, An American Marriage by Teyoni Jones. I'm not familiar with it, but I will be. By the time March 25th rolls around, we'll enjoy talking about that. Program note, no Penguin hockey tonight. The Penguins are idle for another day, coming off that disappointing loss to Philadelphia on Saturday night. The Pens will be in Columbus to play the Blue Jackets tomorrow night, one of the teams that they're battling for a playoff spot. And, of course, we'll have the game for you here on WISR, live radio play-by-play tomorrow. The Penguins have 20 games left, and they need to put together a winning streak to secure a playoff spot. So Penguin hockey tomorrow night here on WISR. And we're keeping our fingers crossed for the Nauk boys basketball team. They lost to Quaker Valley on Saturday, but there's still a chance that they could make the state playoffs. They have to root for Quaker Valley to win the WPIO 4A title, and that'll give Nauk a chance to play again. And if they do, we'll have that for you here on WISR. That's our program for today. I'm Dave Malarkey. Enjoy the rest of your Monday, and hope to see you tomorrow at 12:30 for the Tuesday edition of It's Your Turn.
Thanks for joining us for today's edition of It's Your Turn with Dave Malarkey here on WISR 680 AM. Today's broadcast is also archived for you online at WISR680.com. Tune in again next time for Dave Malarkey's It's Your Turn, weekdays from 12:30 to 1:30, right here on WISR 680.